Alright, so hello and welcome to another episode of The Raven in the Road. Today we have special guest with us, Ted Tinker. He's a music educator in Fort Mill, South Carolina, with an extensive history in DCI and music education. Having received his master's in music education from the University of North Carolina at Greensboro, he's here to talk with us about his journey as a music educator and to give us an inside look at his responsibilities while sharing valuable tactics for successfully leading a classroom. So, hello and welcome, Ted Tinker. Thank you for taking the time to come on out here.
Yeah, of course. It's always a thrill. It's always cool to have some of these unique opportunities, and I'm very excited.
Heck yeah. So, would you mind taking us through just a second your story as a musician and also as a music educator?
Yeah, of course. So I've known music for a very long time. So I actually just remembered, you know, the other day whenever I was looking over some of the stuff that we'll be discussing today, that my great uncle had a big band up in Buffalo, New York.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, so it was really cool. And I was even scrolling through his Facebook today. He passed away probably about 10 odd years or so. You know, may he rest in peace. But he's probably the only other person in my family that has a music degree. And I think that's really cool. So he played saxophone, was a band leader for a big band up in Buffalo, New York. And he used to watch me all the time when I was little because, you know, my mom was, at the time, was a single mother. And she'll be at work, she'll be at school, so I'll be at their house all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of memories of, like, him playing things or, you know, demonstrating instruments for me. But I know that had to have some big influence on, you know, me wanting to be involved in music. Another thing, too, is I remember my mother all the time, she had a flute. She was a flute player. Mm. And she would play just basic nursery rhymes and all that stuff on her flute all the time growing up. So it kind of started from there. And then, you know, I took orchestra in fifth grade. When I was in elementary school, I played viola. I held a viola, or I tried to do as much as I could with it. You know, even now as a music educator, going back and be like, oh my God, I played the viola. Like, how did I read that clef, and how did I, you know, kind of get to a basic understanding of that, you know, meeting with my strings teacher once a week. And then from there, you know, I joined band. I started on trumpet. I was not a great trumpet player. I'll go ahead and admit that. Okay. So I held the trumpet again, and then I thought I was good. You know, obviously as a kid, it was like, oh yeah, I play the trumpet, I'm awesome. No. Trumpet ego. But no, I was not good as a trumpet player. So after that, I learned euphonium. I read treble clef on euphonium, and then I switched to tuba at the end of my seventh grade year, and I've been playing tuba ever since then. So graduated from K-Fear High School in 2011, and then I went to the University of North Carolina at Pembroke, where, you know, you and I both met. Oh. And that was such a really unique music experience, you know, even coming from Cape Fear, which was a relatively small band program, and then going to another sort of middle, like, large sort of music program at Pembroke. And through there, you know, made all the connections and friendships, and I got to, you know, march with Carolina Crown in 2013, 2014. I began teaching drum corps, you know, during my senior year, super senior year. Yeah, so one extra semester more than needed, but I feel like, you know, that's kind of the track that everyone goes through nowadays. But yeah, ever since then, you know, I came back to Fayetteville after I graduated. I taught for 3 years with Felicia McNaught over at McLean's Middle School, the middle school that I attended as a student. Mm. And I went on my own and taught by myself for about a year and a half during COVID. And then I branched away from education for about a year and a half. I was an educational representative with music and arts. And then I just felt that strong gravitational pull to come back to education. So now I'm down here in South Carolina at River Bluff High School as assistant band director. During that time, during COVID and trying to get transitioned back into teaching, I finished my master's degree. I went to the University of North Carolina, Greensboro. I did it online, which was very unique experience. and actually, I kind of liked it. And speaking of, like, going from the undergraduate experience to the graduate experience, something that always kind of stuck with me, and I don't know if you've had many discussions with Dr. Altman, but I had told him my ambitions a long time ago during my undergraduate degree to I wanted to get my master's in music education. Mm. And something that he always suggested or sort of encouraged me to do was, you know, wait a few years after you graduate and then go back, and then you'll have a whole arsenal of things that you want to learn more in depth, and you'll have a little bit more experience to speak off of.
No.
Which at the time I didn't really understand or appreciate that, because, you know, I was just a kid, you know. Right. But going into that experience, I'm like, oh, I am in such a better place now because of my experience, and I can actually speak off of my experience with all my classes, because a lot of the classes were, you know, education geared sources of classes, and a lot of the topics of discussion and other things that we had to discuss in those forums were stuff that, you know, had to be based off of experience, or what you would think that experience would be if you haven't been in the classroom. So I guess a little bit long-winded with that answer, but it's kind of the rough sketch of where I'm at now. And I did just come off a stint of teaching, you know, drum corps for about 7 seasons now with the Crossman Drum and Bugle Corps. And then, of course, you know, that's not happening now this summer with the Santa Clara Vanguard with everything that occurred. But, yeah, that's where I'm at right now.
I really like that.
And, you know, that's just what happens. You know, you're still a kid when you go to college, and you're still trying to figure things out. And then after everyone goes their separate ways and you're out of that environment, you kind of just get slapped with reality. It's like, here's what you can do with music. And there's so many different things you can do with music, which is fascinating to me. No. You know, I've took the educator route, and then, you know, you of course have taken more of like a performance lesson sort of route, and you've been very successful with it, I would say. And I know plenty of others that are kind of in the same situation as you are, very talented musicians that have gone on and have done very unique things, you know, teaching lessons, gigging, and running a podcast. Stuff that I wasn't very great at doing, but, you know, I definitely appreciate people that are like you that can showcase their skill sets that way too.
I appreciate it. Well, and that's honestly what I love so much about our university. I feel like the professors were so unique and
very unique.
Right.
Yeah.
But with that comes, you know, you get all these different insights. And so whether it's the more classical route of, you know, teaching education, how can I take my love for music? How can I create business opportunities or provide value for other people through these creative kind of ventures?
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of us had pretty similar experiences with, you know, our undergraduate experience at Pembroke. And, you know, there is a lot of professors that are very laid back and relaxed and were down to earth. And we had those professors that were, you know, extremely cutthroat and, you know, nose in the paint. So, you know, I was definitely taught as a performance geared, you know, student. So were the other students that were inside the education program. And, you know, at the time I didn't really appreciate the intensity-ness of, you know, the lessons and the high standards of expectation. But now as a teacher and, you know, out of that system, I definitely appreciated, you know, somebody being over me and, you know, really trying to push me to my fullest potential and keep me accountable. Because, you know, at the end of the day, that's what I do with my students now. These, you know, really high expectations and trying to guide them towards the water.
So did you have any big kind of ta-da moment where you were like, music education, this is what I'm here for?
You know, I'm not going to lie. In my undergraduate experience, I had a lot of toss-ups and personal feelings for what I wanted to do. So when I went into college, I definitely wanted to be more performance-based. And then after getting a little bit of a taste of the performance reality, I was kind of concerned about what my career pathway would be. And, you know, there were several times that I thought about dropping out of college because, you know, I've always been one of those students where I didn't really have to try hard to get good grades in high school. Everything was super easy. And, you know, college was the first time I was ever really challenged. And, you know, I didn't have a really great first semester. And, you know, luckily I had professors and teachers that had my back and pushed me, and I kind of recovered from that. So I was very performance-based, and I was wanting to go into performance. And that kind of all changed after I marched my first summer at Carolina Crown. And part of the reason why was because I got taught by, you know, some of the best educators from around the country, you know, like Matt Harloff over at Avon, and then some of the people that teach all over the country now at different places. It's kind of hard to keep track of where they're at now. But, you know, some of them have really renowned high school programs, collegiate programs, and all that stuff. the aha moment was whenever I was standing on the field and constantly getting feedback and constantly being taught through different concepts in different manners, that just kind of ignited a spark within me. And like, you know, I would love to pass this information along to my students one day. You know, I was like, you know, I had to pay thousands of dollars to, you know, receive that level of instruction. You know, not a lot of people are fortunate to ever receive that information. And I just felt like it was my calling to come back and give back to my students. And also, you know, trying to pay back, you know, all the homages and all that stuff that my teachers have gave me, you know, Felicia and Mike over at, you know, Mack Williams and Cape Fear. And they are perfect examples of what I like to call service band directors. So meaning that, you know, they serve their community, serve the school, serve their students, and, you know, they do anything and everything to make sure that their students have the best experience possible. And that's always been sort of my drive is, you know, I had a great time in high school and I had a pretty great time whenever, you know, I was in college and I marched drum corps. And I just want to make sure that whoever I teach and whoever I interact with also has those same experiences or a better experience than I had. Just because I think that's just the true nature of what music is. It's all about giving good experiences.
I like it a lot. Kind of a thought I had a couple years after graduation, especially with all the traveling I did, was, you know, from one teacher. So, you know, I'll take Mr. Day for an example. Little did he know all the things he went through in his life, that experience he gained, that wisdom he accumulated to then pour out into all the students. But I mean, we'll just take me in particular. And then how I'm able to take that, just like what you're talking about, kind of pouring that back in into the students in the community and and just serving the community in that way. And all over the globe, you know, and when I would travel and do that stuff, I'm like, he never knew when he was coming up that like there would be people all the way across on the literal other side of the planet that are now affected. And he's that ripple, that kind of ripple effect started with him. And so I don't know, there's something powerful about that. And it's just, man, to think that like, yeah, the effect that you have and how can that, how that can impact students and generations. And yeah, you just have no idea.
Yeah. And I think that's just a perfect example of, people always kind of struggle with their selves of like, well, I don't know what value or what I can bring to people, but no matter what type of teacher you are or what level of teacher you are, you're still going to impact, you know, some student in your life or a group of students in your life. And, you know, if I never had, you know, my teachers, you know, I don't know where I would be at in life, you know. So I think it's your contribution matters, but you don't know or don't realize it until much later down the road or after you see your students have a lot of successes. So it's a very valuable field to be in, just not just music education, but just music itself. Because, you know, just like with some of the values that we shared within the fraternity and all that stuff, a lot of it's giving back and serving the community and trying to present that to everybody.
Well, that's the funniest part. It's almost like production where it's 80 to 90% of the time, you're probably not going to see the effects that you've had or the impact you've made. But you have to be okay with that. And so like the ego, you know, and just letting that go, that requires is something else. All right. So kind of jumping into your day-to-day as a band director, what are some of the different classes you teach?
All right. So this is kind of interesting. So I'm at a school that's labeled as a EL school, which is an effective learner school. So a lot of it is student-centric learning. So trying to make the student an independent learner. So it is quite challenging to do that sort of system in a band program. But I do something called questioning, which I learned from marching in drum corps and teaching drum corps. It's a part of the essential-centric package of EL learning. So I ask a lot of questions, allows the kids to critically think, and then it creates or allows them to be a little bit more independent with their learning. So, for example, I'll be teaching a class, I'll be doing some warm-up fundamentals, and instead of me giving the feedback to the students, I question them. So, you know, ask some leading questions, like, hey, what are some great things that we heard during that warm-up? All right, what are some things that could have gone a little bit better? All right, can you tell me why those things are occurring and why those things are happening. So it allows the students to be a little bit more independent and to create, you know, a little bit more inclined musicianship within themselves. So I definitely love to teach my students how to listen deeper, to have better ears, because, you know, even you as a musician, you know this, if you can't hear it, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know how effective you're going to be at fixing what you can't hear.
If you don't even know what's wrong.
Yeah, if you don't know if it's wrong. So I try to teach my students to learn how to listen for those small things and try and fix and isolate those small things. But outside of that, so the other couple classes I teach a Piano 1 class, which is semester-based.
Yeah.
So definitely appreciated the piano classes.
Shout out Dr. John and Beth.
Yeah, Dr. John, Dr. Beth, yeah. So definitely appreciate everything they did with us. And even too, I've been kind of dabbling and experimenting with that class some. So at the beginning, we kind of started together and we went over, you know, all the basic musicianship stuff, how to read the ledger lines and how to read the spaces and how to read the treble clef notes, bass clef notes, hand positions, posture. And then from there, I kind of started to let them go a little bit more independent. Yeah. And it's actually kind of worked pretty well. So I have about, I think it's like 15, 16 students that are in there. We have a big piano lab at our school. Each of them have headphones and all that stuff, so they're able to practice individually. But it allows me to have the freedom and flexibility to almost work with them more one-on-one. So that's a really cool and unique class. The only thing I don't like about that system is you can take piano one, but then you can't take piano two until the next year since it's semester-based. It's in the same time.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the other classes, which I'm still sort of trying to learn more about myself, is it's a digital music class.
Oh.
So I have two different levels. So I have a intro to like music technology class where they learn how to use Logic and learn all about the different DAW interfaces and all that stuff. And then I have an advanced class, which the focus of that class is the students take all the things that they learned from the first class and they integrate it into creating their own essentially like EP albums and all that stuff, which is pretty unique and pretty cool. We have some really creative students in that current class right now. A lot more creative than I would admittedly say than myself. Yeah. They're very creative. So those are some of the more unique classes. And then, of course, throughout the rest of the day, I sort of assist my band director or my head director with all of his duties and responsibilities. So I would say probably my biggest role and biggest responsibility with that band program is I am the logistics guy. So I plan out all the day-to-day sort of like schedules and functions for the band program, especially during marching band season. I kind of led all the communication for stuff with the staff, payroll, and then also as well within like just planning for marching band rehearsal and all that stuff.
Okay.
So yeah, it's pretty jam-packed with all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then the thing that makes it even more complicated is we have an ABC day schedule. So it's kind of yeah. Well, they call it flex mod. So flex mod meaning that, you know, there's different mods and different schedules. So each of my classes have different classes and different meeting times every single day. So I mean it's the same schedule, but the one, like say the band 1-2 class, which is a concert band, they'll meet on Monday like sometime in the mid afternoon, and then I won't see them again until Wednesday and Thursday. And some of the classes are longer, some of the classes are shorter, and that's the same thing with all the other classes. So on average, most of the classes are about 50 minutes. Okay. And then the longer period classes are your typical like 90 minute schedule.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Now is this a public school or is this a private school?
Yeah, this is a public school. Yeah. So it's kind of, I think there's a few schools that are accredited with the EL learning sort of style, but I think it's just what our school district does. So like we're not the only ones that do it. Like our middle school feeders and our elementary feeders kind of have the same thing. And then, the last thing I forgot to mention too. So we all have a homeroom. It's called Crew. So it's sort of like a SEL, social emotional learning sort of experience. So students will come in for 45 minutes every single day, middle of the day, and then they go to lunch afterwards. But we have a bunch of like different group activities and just SEL stuff that we do. Like the most recent one we did, which was really, really unique and really, really beautiful thing to do, We called it Ellis Stuff a Stocking. So one of our teachers, I think it was probably about almost 8 years ago or 9 years ago, I might be wrong with that, but his daughter died in a car accident from a drunk driving incident. And they created a sort of charity through that because, you know, his daughter loved Christmas and loved giving and loved sponsoring families and just loved being a part of that. And so we have our whole school does this event where everyone brings in gifts. The kids wrap the gifts and we try and get all the needs and wants on the list. And then we have a big old drop-off event where we fill up a bunch of box trucks and, you know, we sponsor hundreds of different families as a school. Man. So just an example, that's something that we do as a school community through that crew class, which I think is really special and really unique.
Man, that's so cool. I don't know. I just feel like I would never hear anything like that coming out of like a public school around here. Just that freedom and flexibility and ingenuity. Wow.
Yeah. And again, too, you know, you and I both grew up in the North Carolina public education system. Yeah. So, you know, that's all we've ever experienced. And, you know, being in South Carolina now as a music educator, it's definitely broadened my horizons on, you know, what different schools and different programs do.
Yeah.
So, I think it's a really beautiful thing that, you know, our school is able to do that. And, you know, I think a lot of that is based off of, you know, how we gear the different education levels going from elementary to middle to high, having that sort of SEL, you know, emphasis and trying to create better humans. And that's a big component of the EL learning system as well as, you know, not just student-centric learning, but it's also more of trying to create good citizens and students that are going to contribute to society in a positive manner.
Yeah. Well, no, and that's something, you know, a lot of the podcasts and stuff I listen to, and when I hear these things, I just try to keep an ear out for it, but they talk about that kind of stuff, and it's, you know, you can think about, just, you know, how do we process emotions, and, you know, unless you end up in, like, a, you know, small group thing at church, like, most people just don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we kind of assume, or, you know, you can even get into the mechanics of, like, do you know how to run? Like, there are, like, legitimate mechanics on, like, on how to run properly. And just some of these things that we just kind of take for granted because we're like, oh, of course you know how to do that. But it's like, have we actually taken the time out to kind of walk through that process with a student? So, that's something else. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Also, one thing I meant to say,
yeah,
but it was along the lines of, like, trying something new. Now that I've started kind of teaching at private schools doing, like, these guitar classes. And even in lessons, right, like, it's always evolving. Like, I'm always adapting, always maybe be more creative or try a different approach for more engagement, but also just, you know, just make it fun, make it unique, and kind of meet the needs of the students. I don't know, you just kind of said that, and it just kind of jumped out. I was like,
I think it's, you know, even us as musicians, we're constantly trying to, you know, figure things out and try and learn new tricks and all those sort of things. But, you know, that's probably been my biggest challenge so far as an educator, and you can probably ask my wife if you ever get a chance to ask her or see her. But, you know, I kind of, you know, almost freaked out a little bit more about that because, you know, I was like, oh, I'm a band director and that's all I'm going to ever do.
Mm.
And then having to come in and teach piano and also teach a digital music class, you know, those are two things that I've never had to do. But through that experience and through learning how to do it, I found, you know, different ways and more creative ways to do my normal things that, you know, I know how to do as just a basic music educator.
Right.
So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing sometimes to, you know, put yourself out there and be uncomfortable and try and do something new and unique.
Yep.
And luckily, you know, we have a wide array of different people that, you know, are there to help us. Like, my counterpart, he's the percussion director, but he teaches the second half of the digital music stuff. He has like audio recording, so there's an intro to audio recording, and then there's you know, the advanced one where they learn how to master and mix and all that stuff. So it's very awesome to have him as my counterpart because there's a lot of strengths that I have, and there's definitely a lot of strengths that he has through his experience with doing all that stuff because he used to do podcast and videos and all that stuff up in Rochester whenever he went to Eastman. So it's really cool working with people that, you know how to do those things, and they're always willing to help and always willing to, you know, give you feedback and you know, figure out different ways to overcome your challenges. And he's a brand new teacher, so he's always coming to me with trying to figure out how to do things in the classroom because, you know, he's never had to do those things. So kind of like a it's a very good relationship to have is, hey, I don't know things, but I'm going to help you because you don't know things as well.
Man, that's really cool. Yeah, and those feedback loops have saved my life. I'm so used to one-on-one, mm-hmm. and so then it's all of a sudden I'm in the classroom and greatly outnumbered. And it's so there was a lot of personal reflection, but also just reaching out to other teachers, like, so how do you like handle these situations? Yeah. Or you know what one I've really struggled with is the reason I love the small groups or one-on-one is you can really meet students where they're at, and so I don't like feeling that I've gone to a place where you can't catch up. Mm-hmm. And so it was really challenging for me, you know, if I have one or two students more on the back end and, you know, five to six that are really excelling, it's like, I don't want to punish anyone, but at the end of the day, someone is going to have to get.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that. And, you know, that's the biggest challenge that we all have as educators is like, how do we meet every student's level? Right. And how do we make sure that they're getting, you know, the education and feedback that pertains to how they are as a learner? So something I've always thought about and learned about, and I don't know where I learned this or where we observed it. It might have been at like, you know, NCMEA one year, but sensory teaching is my favorite go-to way of teaching new concepts to students. It works really great inside the middle school setting as well. And it's just how every person learns. So like, you know, what type of learner are you? Do you have to feel it? Do you have to hear it? Do you have to see it? Are you a blend of some of them?
Yeah. So for me personally, if I can put my hands on it, it's pretty good. For me, I need to see if I can understand. So if I can get like the inner workings of everything, that's how I'm. But like if I can really understand how each individual part at its basic core affects the grander machine, that's.
And you know, that's what I try to cater towards whenever I teach new concepts. So I try to hit every sort of different way to sensory learn different things because every student's can be different. Like, I'm very visual, have to see it. Mm-hmm. And even too, like, I'm one of those people that has to have subtitles on for like everything because I'm just so distracted sometimes that, you know, I kind of miss or don't hear some things. And it might be because of just, you know, drum corps and band and all that stuff. My hearing's going. But I know I can hear pretty decently or pretty well, but I'm one of those people I have to see what they're saying in order for me to kind of comprehend what they're doing. And I guess it's the same way with music. So like, you know, I have to see the music. I have a pretty okay ear with like, you know, trying to learn things by rote and trying to figure things out by myself, but it's not my preferred way to do it. So anyway, sensory teaching is one of those things I absolutely love doing with students because it just caters to whatever their learning style is. And if you do it three different sensory ways or all the different sensory ways, minus tasting. I don't want them to taste their instrument. But I just feel like it's more effective and, you know, gives many different types of students many different opportunities to learn a concept. So I would say, you know, to you or to whoever listens to this, if you're trying to figure out how to meet every student's level, you know, just try and, you know, cater a full lesson to different ways of sensories. And you might get to every type of student that way.
All right.
Yeah. And in the bougie way, the bougie way I've always done it and it's been really effective is just bringing people that know how to, you know, do the things that you can't do. So when I taught by myself over at Swift Creek, when I was up there in Johnson County, I would bring in Chris Nelson to teach saxophone, teach clarinet. I hired a full-time percussion instructor to come and do all that stuff. And then I would bring in a flute instructor because I'm not great at flute. And then everything else, I mean, it's just a brass instrument. So I kind of did that to myself. So I was like, all right, I'm going to stick with what I know how to do well. And then I'm going to let all the other people that know how to do those things better than me come in and do those. And not only just for them to come in and teach them, but you can come in and you can observe like the way that they teach those concepts.
It's
a good opportunity for me as well to have a little bit of a professional development with those types of people. Like when I was at Swift Creek still, and Chris Nelson would come in and work with the woodwinds, I had an eighth grade jazz band at the end of the day. So I actually asked Chris to come in and teach an improv lesson to all my students. Because, you know, I don't know how to improv.
You're better.
I was going to say I'm a tuba player. I just play, you know, roots and fifths. He came in and worked with the kids and actually got my trumpet out and I tried to you know, do blues scales and learn how to read the different chord symbols as well with them. And that was a really valuable experience. And I think, you know, even as a former younger educator, I didn't realize the value of those experiences and opportunities, not only for my students, but for me as a continuing learner as well as an educator. So definitely surround yourself by people that know how to do things that you don't know how to do. And then just ask questions. They're always willing to, you know, talk about those things and teach you how to do those things.
Yeah. Man, I like that. Well, and that's what's funny is back in college, one of my jobs was recording. So whether it was concerts or masterclass series, especially, and for whatever reason, Dr. Van Hassel always made sure we had percussion masterclasses for days lined up. And so just the relationship we had, and of course, with Brandon, you know, I'd always kind of get drug along with. And I can't tell you how valuable all those were. And I carry with me, whether it was, you know, from the jazz events we would hold and just the masterclasses from that, or, you know, percussionists, pianists, whatever it was, because so many of those concepts are universal.
Yeah.
And it's like, I can take, kind of like what you're talking about earlier, I can take hundreds, if not thousands of dollars worth of masterclasses and teachings, and I can start introducing this to a fifth grader. Yeah. Like, oh man, that's just, it's amazing. If I am high schooler, starting to consider, you know, what it is I want to do with my life, and as a high schooler, you know, you are obligated to know exactly what you want to do and where you're going with your life. What are the processes like for collegiate education? I mean, do I have to get a music education degree? Or are there other ways around it? Or
I mean, there are certainly other ways to get around it. I know there's plenty of people that I've taught with, or I went to school with, you know, they'll get like their bachelor in the arts, or they'll get a non-education based music degree. And you can go in through lateral entry. So you could interview for a job, and if they accept you into the position, you sign the paperwork, they'll send you to like different classes that like the school district provides, or like a local community college will provide. And they'll give you those basic like certifications that you need to pass the praxis. So like, it's not only just, you know, the praxis too that kind of holds its weight with, you know, being certified to teach, but it's just like all those other like intricacies of, you know, just basic like education instruction and strategies and all those different things. So yeah, there's different ways. So I know, for example, our percussion director right now, River Bluff, he's lateral entry. He has his master's in percussion performance from Eastman. Has no classroom experience, has no education degree, but he is going through lateral entry and getting his full certification so that he can, you know, be fully certified in the state of South Carolina. And, you know, that just carries over with you wherever you go. Like, I transferred all my stuff from North to South Carolina, and I didn't have to do anything extra other than, you know, pay money. Always pay money.
Oh, of course. Man, that's pretty cool. Yeah, because I know, yeah, certain degrees and professions, you kind of got to get do a whole recertification process. So,
universal. I've even seen some extreme examples, you know, outside of music. There's been people that, you know, teach like home ec, and then they'll go take their English praxis, or they'll take their social studies praxis, or get certified to teach math, and then they'll do those on the side, or in addition to their duties and responsibilities for their main job. And that is another way that, you know, some teachers make extra income. So like they can do tutoring after school, or they can do all sorts of different things at like third party schools, like private schools and all that stuff with those certifications. So
All right, man. Yeah. And I really like how those schools kind of come up behind and kind of support the teachers for those courses and, you know, seeing that through for them. So in your time, whether it was shadowing other music educators or, you know, working alongside other individuals, what approaches to teaching have you found to be most beneficial and personally inspiring for you?
I mean, I know there's a lot of people that like to teach by themselves. But I love team teaching.
Okay.
So working with Felicia over at Mack Williams, and now being the assistant director with Kevin Hebert over at River Bluff, definitely working with a large crew or a large pot of people, I think covers all the gaps. And I think that's probably the most beneficial form of education is, you know, working with others. And, you know, not a lot of teachers have that sort of luxury to be able to work with somebody else that is certified to do the same thing that you do and have the same time allotted to be in the classroom at the same time that you are. But even in the drum corps setting, you know, working with a large net of people in the same room at the same time kind of just covers all the nooks and crannies that exist within a rehearsal. So we constantly bounce off of each other. I'll be teaching, and then he'll pipe in with feedback or with things that I didn't hear or things that I weren't necessarily paying attention to. And I do the same thing for him and his ensembles and his rehearsals. Okay. So definitely having a team of educators together, I think, is, you know, a very unique way to making sure that a child gets a really great level of education. Yeah. And again, not everyone is in that situation, but if you're ever in that situation, definitely take advantage of, you know, the people that you work with. So if you have an assistant or if you're the assistant, you know, get in there, try and do some different things. Like, for example, when I was with Felicia all the time, she would lead the classroom rehearsal. I would take students out one by one or in large group settings. And I would give them sort of like a mini masterclass or a mini private lesson. And I think having that tiered level system of learning where they're getting large group instruction from one teacher and they're getting individual instruction from another teacher is another effective strategy. So you'll hear it called a multi-tiered system of learning, I think, is like the proper term for it. But, you know, I just know it's like a large ensemble or sectionals.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So we know it is that. But in the normal educational world, it's a multi-tiered system of learning.
Gotcha.
So that is another effective team teaching strategy that I've found to work really well as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I really like that, too, because, you know, even earlier you were mentioning with Nelson, of course, you paid him, but having those relationships to go into your professional career with, you know, and acknowledging that I'm not, you know, Mr. Professional in every aspect of music education. And so let me pull from my friends and colleagues and have them give their input and pull their strengths. To where I feel like, yeah, even if you don't have that money, you know, hopefully it'd be nice. But, you know, even if it was pulling favors once in a blue moon, but having those relationships in general to kind of help you out. I really like that.
Yeah. And I think that's something you should definitely do. And even too, if you don't have the opportunity to pay people to come in, you can always ask your local band director or local sort of icon, people that really know how to do stuff really well. Yeah. Hey, can I come in and sit in your rehearsal? Can I just come and watch like some of the things that you do? And I would say like 9 times out of 10, like most band directors will be okay with other people coming to observe them. Mm. And I've had a lot of people come and observe me during my time when I taught in North Carolina. I thought it was very flattering and all that stuff. Yeah, but I think it's great for us to help each other, even if, you know, money is not involved or, you know, favors are not involved and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, definitely, you know, I was going to say be humble, but, you know, try to reach out to people that are in your area if you don't have anything else, you know, because people are there to help you whether you realize it or not.
Mm. Yeah. Well, especially, you know, go back to that objective. Why are you even doing this in the first place? And I feel like most teachers don't do it for the money.
Oh, no.
And so, right, so,
definitely not.
Right, yeah. And so if they have that passion, that heart behind, you know, teaching, yeah, I don't see why they wouldn't want to be supportive for, you know, yeah, sharing their expertise, you know, which, yeah, flattery for sure. Well, and it's funny, too, you know, Carson a couple weeks ago was talking about the benefit of bringing on hired help. And, of course, that was... He was talking with marching band, but similar kind of field of, you know, yeah, everyone kind of having their own lanes and ways that they can assist and help. Have you ever found structural problems in regards to like authority? Like, have you ever seen with that if you have too many people in a room?
Well, I mean, that's naturally going to happen no matter where you go. Like, for example, I'm very type A when it comes to it, being in the classroom and being over logistics and all those things. So you're naturally going to clash with people. You know, there's type A, type B people. Definitely if you have too many type A's, you know, it's never a really healthy mix, but, you know, it's just naturally going to happen. Luckily, you know, I've learned, you know, through my different experiences with being by myself and then also having prior experience teaching with somebody that was also a type A. You just got to know your checks and balances. Mm. So, you know, I was always told, like, for example, when I was at Mac Williams, you know, we were co-directors, but, and, you know, to Felicia's standards and what she wanted, you know, I was the assistant band director, even though on paper we were co-directors. So, you know, we naturally had our quarrels and we had our heads bash all the time. And that was a very unique situation as well, because she was my teacher. So, you know, she probably saw me still as her student. So constantly, in a little bit, sometimes I would feel a little undermined, but I knew at the end of the day afterwards, after I'd left and gone to be by myself and be a teacher, that, you know, all the things that she was doing, she was just trying to help me, but it was just miscommunicated. But yeah, so just in many different settings, you know, just got to kind of understand what your role is, and it's a very big pill to swallow sometimes.
Oh yeah.
There's, you know, for example, there's ways that I teach in my classroom and the way that my head director teaches, very similar, but then there's ways that are not very similar. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's his band program and that's what he wants to do. That's what he wants to do. And, you know, I got to respect his decision because, you know, I'm here to support him and I'm here to be his assistant. So definitely think that talking about things and being open and, you know, just having that healthy conversation flow definitely helps in any sort of environment, but especially in those big team teaching environments. Yeah. Just got to constantly be comfortable with talking about difficult things and talking about uncomfortable things and trying to see things from different angles and avenues. It's definitely a very hard thing to learn how to do, but definitely a very effective thing to have occur.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, it just takes me back to Spirit of the Carolinas when we had the not listing names.
Yeah.
But when we had two co
drum major.
Co-drum majors, yeah.
Yeah.
But kind of like what you were saying earlier, we're like, you know, at the end of the day, I knew this program belonged to insert name. And so I do think kind of, yeah, between having that hierarchy, but also that clear communication really helps, especially when you have two type A persons.
Yeah. I mean, and that'll do it, man. Because when you're type A, like, that's all you know how to do.
Right.
Especially from people that, you know, have taught by themselves for a long time and then get their program to be big enough and they have, you know, assistant director or assistant directors. Right. It's a hard thing to learn how to do. But it's just one of those things, you have to learn how to do it. And it's not just in the classroom, right? It's, you know, with all the other adults in the building. It's with parents and it's with, you know, your administrators, your bosses. You just got to learn how to be uncomfortable and be open with different things that you're passionate about. You know, and that's something I wish I would have learned a little bit more about when I was going through my undergraduate experience, was how to be more comfortable and be more open with voicing my concerns about things that were legitimate, you know?
I feel that.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of things that you don't learn until you learn how to do.
Yeah. Well, and once again, that kind of goes back to Dr. Altman, and that's what that same kind of concept of get that experience first. And yeah, I feel like I can really see the wisdom in that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just having that, going in and having that context where it's not just these abstract teaching philosophies. Is there any advice you'd give your younger self?
I still struggle with this, but just be patient. You know, I'm very forward thinking, so I like to plan out months ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I already have all the way up until probably almost the fall already planned out for next year. You know, we've already started working on the March Madness show. And even within my own personal life, we have things like planned through like the end of the summer before starting the school year. So I have to constantly remind myself, and even have to remind my students as well, you just got to be patient. So, you know, things take time and there's a process to everything. You might not understand it now, but you'll understand and appreciate it later. So definitely, and you know, and me from our undergraduate experience, you know, I was not always the most patient person. So I definitely wanted things to be done as quickly as possible so that we can get to the end goal as quickly as possible. And sometimes it doesn't happen that fast, you know, and that's something I've had to learn over the last few years, is just, it's going to take some time and it's not going to be perfect, but, you know, if you stay persistent and you stay patient, stay humble, it's going to happen. And even too, like, I took over the concert band program at this new school And, you know, they had a completely different director and different set of expectations. So other directors are really laid back, and I'm very intense and upfront and personal about everything. I cracked down on my students one day in marching band season. And ever since then, you know, they've kind of turned it around. And I think it's also an important thing to, you know, not only to give your students good critique, but to, you know, give them positives, you know, give them, you know, celebrations and, you know, really highlight, you know, all the students and the different sections that are doing different things and doing well. That's something I've grown a new appreciation for is, you know, really, you know, highlighting your students and letting them know when they're doing well and having that positive reinforcement. Because, you know, at the end of the day, the kids are not going to have a good time if all they're hearing is, you know, negative feedback.
No.
Yeah, so I try to give them as much positive reinforcement along with, you know, some good critique and stuff that they can think about and focus on.
I like that. Yeah. Well, it kind of takes me back. There's something I heard where it was out of, say, every 11 things you say, and they were studying it with spouses. Yeah, if 7 out of 11 things you say are negative,
mm-hmm.
the chances of the divorce rate were exponential. Also, if it was 4 out of 11, it was really high as well. So they're like, there's this really interesting balance, but between both the negatives and the positives. And that's, yeah, it's definitely been something I've been trying to be more aware of and intentional with for sure.
Yeah. And, I mean, the easiest way I've always been taught to do is, the sandwich method, you know, positive up front, criticism in the middle for the meat and protein, and then ending with the positive.
And don't forget the diphthongs.
Yeah, so I know I definitely didn't realize that I was really negative when I was a younger teacher. And one of my Crossman students, believe it or not, in drum corps, you know, where we're very cutthroat and very intense about everything. One of my students was like, hey, man, are you going to give us some positives, or you're going to give us some, you know, positive gloats? And I'm like, oh, am I not doing that? So sometimes you don't ever know. And
I just didn't yell at you. What do you mean?
Yeah, it's like, well, I'm being paid, to, you know, give you my feedback and give you my critique. But, you know, they're still kids and they still want to hear when they're doing stuff well. And it took somebody to point it out to me to actually realize that. So if you don't ever have somebody that points it out to you, you know, I always recommend people to just record themselves teaching a lesson.
Mm.
It's very exposing. It's very uncomfortable. But you learn a lot from watching yourself. Because you can go, okay, that was great, and why am I talking about that? Like, why did I say it that way? That did not make any sense, or that came off rather very rude or offensive. Maybe I shouldn't, you know, teach that concept that way. So sometimes, you know, just like listening to yourself, like in a recording, it's like, oh my God, do I really sound like that? It's the same thing with teaching. So if you ever are curious about how you teach or what your students see through their eyes, just get the camera out and record yourself for a lesson.
Talk about putting yourself in an uncomfortable situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, man. That's cool. I'm going to have to try that. Well, Ted, thank you so much for making the hike all the way out here. And
oh, yeah. No problem. It's always fun.